Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I've been mulling over whether or not, now that we are less than 2 weeks away from beginning to celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, whether or not we should transition in the second hour now to a presentation of Pesach and then to Matzah and then to Bukurim, that's Passover, unyeasted bread and firstborn children, for those unfamiliar with the Hebrew terms that Yahweh ascribed to them. Or if we return, now that we have finished the what's called the Aaronic blessing and gone through the whole process of translating and understanding as it relates to that passage in Numbers, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, and then simply return to questioning Paul, which is where we left off, happened to be where Paul was saying that he prevailed in the Jerusalem summit. And proof of that is that Titus, a Greek, was not compelled to be circumcised. And I was going to spend considerable time comparing what Paul said in regards to circumcision versus what Yahweh has to say. And so as I mull these things over, I think that at this point there will be more people who will benefit if we transition to a presentation on Passover, matzah, on yeasted bread, and firstborn children. Because this is the pathway to God. And yesterday we had a call from one of my favorite callers to this program. And he was particularly interested in understanding what Passover represents and how to best observe it. And what was so appealing about that phone call is this is an individual who, when we began this program years ago on Genesis Communication Network, called in. He was one of the very first callers to the program, and his call was to defend Muhammad and Islam. And it, for those who may not know, he was taking issue with the fact that I called Muhammad a pedophile for being 53 and having sex with a six-year-old girl. And he wanted to use the Islamic methodology to justify that. And that's where we began our conversation so many years ago. And for him now to come from that to understanding who God actually is, that his name is Yahweh, that he provided his Torah teaching so that he could guide us to the covenant relationship, and wanting to be part of that covenant, and for the first time, observing, answering the invitation to participate in Passover, unyeasted bread, and firstborn children, and wanting to know specifics about how to go about doing that. That tells me that not only he, but so many of those who have written over these past years have come a long way and have gone from not knowing who God is, in fact having a religious conception of him, to actually knowing who he is and being part of his family. You know, it was interesting that yesterday, after the show, after Roy had the opportunity to go to sleep, since it was, I guess, 1:30 in the morning when we, or almost 2, actually, when we parted yesterday. He wrote me a letter and said, you know, I know you don't like to hear that without you, I would never have come to know who God is, would never be part of his family. And, I'm mixed in this regard, and since we're talking about it now, I am actually thrilled when somebody says, you know, because of your willingness to share Yahweh's testimony, accurately and completely translated and with the insights the commentary provides into those translations, that thousands of people around the world have come to know who God is and are now participating in his covenant and attending his invitations to meet with him, to party with him, Pesach being the doorway to his home, the first of these. So that brings great pleasure. The family is being increased, enlarged. Brings a smile to God's face, most certainly brings a smile to mine. I view it as I don't deserve any credit, don't want to take any credit because I'm not doing anything special. I have no unique qualifications. It's not my testimony. It's not my plan. It's his plan. It's his testimony. I'm simply sharing what he told all of us. I don't have any secret insights. I don't have a secret text. I'm not claiming to be a prophet. I'm simply sharing with you what he shared with all of us. And talking about it so that more people come to understand it. So I think it is appropriate that we continue with a presentation of Pesach, Matzen B'Korim. And Pesach is the one and only doorway to Yahweh's home. There is no other. It is the way that we can become part of his family. It is the doorway to eternal life. And it's interesting that Yahweh doesn't begin the process by saving us. And that it's interesting, too, that this path that he has provided to his home is seven steps, demonstrating his focus on a formula that is always 6 + 1 = 7. The seventh step here happens to be to camp out with him in his home. The first, logically, is a doorway or a gateway to eternal life. That it is a process whereby very little is required of us, but we most certainly have to engage. If we're not willing to get up on our feet and engage, then we can't receive the benefits. So when you realize that Passover is presented as a doorway to life, the first understanding is that nobody crawls through a doorway. You walk through a doorway. If there is a doorway, if it's locked, you're in trouble. So there is a way for that door to be opened. And if the door is opened, you don't crawl through it, you walk through it. But if you just sit there like a bump on a log on one side of the doorway and say, hey, there's a doorway over there, but I'm afraid. I'm scared of what's on the other side of that doorway. I'm not going through it. Not going to do any good. If you are told that there's a doorway there, but you just choose to say, you know, I'm going to stay in Flatland. You know, I've heard that there is a portal, you know, like Mickey Mouse could be saying to Minnie Mouse, you know, I've heard that we have a creator. And I've heard that over there that our creator is Walt Disney. He has a name. And that he has provided a book for us of guidance and direction as to how we can transition from Flatland to the three-dimensional construct that Walt Disney, our creator, lives in. Now, the doorway by which Walt could have drawn in Flatland for them to move to eternity, which is one of the dimensions, if you will, where Walt lived, would not do Minnie and Mickey any good if they said, you know, I think that could be scary out there. Let's not go. Wouldn't do them any good if they said, you know, Minnie, we've got this philosophy about tunes, and we think that the tunes are gods. And so we're just going to hang here with the other tunes. And yeah, I'm sure that these tunes are just like us, and they're two-dimensional constructs, and they're not real, but nonetheless, we're going to continue to worship tunes. Doorway doesn't do them any good. If they were to say, you know, yeah, we had Walt, our creator, write us a very specific plan that provides guidance as to how to be increased from this two-dimensional construct to enter the three-dimensional construct that's infinitely superior. But that we as tunes, as the creation, are going to choose to ignore that. We're going to choose to discard it. We're going to choose to demean it. And we're not going to answer any of the invitations that Walt has provided for us to meet with him. Now, if that sounds familiar, that's Christianity. That's Pauline Christianity. Yeah, we're going to disregard that Torah, that instruction book, and we're not going to meet with God on any of the invitations that he has provided as parties for us to gather and to meet with him. And oh, by the way, we are going to worship other tunes, two-dimensional constructs that are false. All of that is what we have done. And yet, in our three-dimensional realm, there is this doorway, a three-dimensional construct called Passover. And if you walk through that doorway, you have eternal life. And it's Yahweh's immediate response is to say, that doorway is part of a path. Don't walk through that doorway unless you are also going to cross the threshold called matzah, where your soul, as it transitions that portal, is immediately cleansed of yeast, which is the fungus that is equated to religious and political activity by no less than Yahusha with his disciples. And if you do observe those two invitations and you pay attention to what God has asked, you'll find yourself adopted into his family, his child, a child with an inheritance. To use the Hebrew term, nun. And interesting, of course, is the fact that we've had these conversations with Kirk, who has, as an artist, has brought the vivid depiction of how the letters define the concepts. And here the Hebrew letter for nun in the original alphabet that was used to create the Torah was depicted as a sperm. 3,500 years before man even knew what a sperm looked like. And it's the child of inheritance. Those are the first three steps. The fourth of those steps to Yahweh's home is, of course, the promise of seven, the promise of the Shabbat, where we rest while Yahweh does the work, as a father would, to enrich and empower his children. And on that day, our souls are enriched with his teaching, powered by his spirit, just as E equals MC squared. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. During the commercial break, today we have John, who's at the helm and the switchboard of the program. Scott is at home recovering from a bug. And he asked a question that I think would be pervasive in our society. In America, because America was conceived along the mythos of Christianity, although it was filtered through the Freemasons' interpretation of religion, this myth exists, and it's pervasive, that doesn't Easter represent Passover? And, of course, the answer is absolutely not. No. As a matter of fact, Easter actually commemorates Easter is a replacement for what occurs on Bukurim, where the soul and spirit are reunited after the Yahusha's soul is freed from Sheol. But let's not get ahead of the story. What is Easter? Since it occurs at a similar time of the year, never, by the way, on the same day, the Roman Catholic Church wanted to make certain that Easter was always different than the Passover by unyeasted bread, matzah, and bakurim. They didn't want their religion in any way, shape, or form to conform to Yahweh's instructions. That was essential, that the religion of Christianity, as it was born in Roman Catholicism, never intersect in any way the testimony and invitations that Yahweh had provided. So the Roman Catholic Church chose to create a holiday that overlaps the celebration of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, called Eshtar. Eshtar was the most popular name of the time of Semiramis, who was called the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God. In Babylon, Ninus was king. Ninus means son. And he was, as the history unfolds, was a hunter, pretty aggressive man, focused on killing. And he, in turn, was killed by a wild boar, which is why the Easter ham is so important. And the 40 days that he evidently suffered is called Weeping for Tammuz in Judaism. And in Christianity, it's Lent. And so it is this this day that commemorates the death of Ninus. And it's celebrated around the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven, Semiramis, in the Babylonian religion. And she claimed, so that she could cling to power after the king had died, that the sun, which was the principal symbol of God in Babylon, that the sun impregnated her on the winter solstice, December 25th, which became the basis of Christmas. And that 9 months later, she gave birth to the son of the sun, making her the consort of God, the sun, and the mother of God. It was very similar here to Christianity all the way through. And it always occurred, therefore, with her being the time of her impregnation, that to the birth on December 25th, excuse me, she's impregnated on Ishtar, on the day that the sun crosses Taurus the bull, the constellation on the vernal equinox, and gives birth to the Son of God on December 25th, which is the winter solstice, the day that the days start to grow longer. So that's the mythology, became the Christian mythology. And you were able, with that mythology, to both create a dying and resurrecting God and a woman who became Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, as well as a birth date for God. Now, mind you, that God can't die. And mind you, that in Flatland, they can't go off and kill Walt Disney. Mickey can't kill Walt Disney. Man can't kill God. God can't die. God can't be born. So all of that mythos is wrong. But this mythos of Ishtar, named after one of the more popular names for Semiramis, became the replacement for God's invitations of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. It became the holiest day on the Christian religious calendar. Wholly in conflict, in competition with the Creator God of the universe. We'll be back after the break. Been chatting with John in the break, and since he was open to me using our previous discussion as the lead-in to our last segment, I'm going to assume that he's comfortable with me doing it again now, and if he's not, since he manages GCN, we won't be here tomorrow on the show. But I think we're in pretty good stead. John asked, so with this information that you're providing, what do you think about the afterlife? Is there an afterlife? And while I did not say this to John, I have said this on this program, and I'm going to say it again. What I think is only valuable if what I think is absolutely consistent with what Yahweh said. So I'm going to share with you what Yahweh said because it's what I think. And what he said, and we were talking in that first hour with Robert about the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. Well, in the second statement that Yahweh etched in stone, he told us that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation. And the studies now that are available to us show that children have an 80% tendency to accept their father's politics and religious beliefs. Political beliefs, religious beliefs, patriotic beliefs. There's about a 10% occurrence with mothers and with other societal influences. So yeah, I was right. A father who is political, a father who is patriotic, a father who is militaristic, a father who is religious will cause their children to be those things, corrupting them, leading them astray, making it very difficult for them to accept the truth. John recognized that religion is actually an obstacle to truth because it precludes people from being willing to consider evidence that is hostile to the lie that they have been indoctrinated in. They have to cling to the lie, and since the lie is vulnerable, anything that shakes their confidence in the lie is very scary to them, so they will reject it, typically using a logical flaw like the ad hominem argument against the individual bringing the argument as opposed to against the argument itself. So what does Yahweh say? He says that most of us, generation after generation, are corrupted by the influence of our fathers because our fathers were political, our fathers were religious, our fathers were militaristic, human institutions. But then he concludes the second statement that he etched in stone, and he says that thousands will benefit from his mercy, his chanan, his undeserved favor, by observing the terms and conditions of the covenant. Well, thousands, and we've done the math before, in a world where there have been billions of souls, is one in a million. And the number Yah said was thousands. So thousands amongst billions is one in a million. One in a million individuals is going to receive the benefits of the covenant, which is to be eternal, to be perfected, to be adopted into Yahweh's family, to be empowered and to be enriched. One in a million is going to accept those terms, accept those benefits by accepting the terms of the covenant, which is to walk away and disassociate oneself from religion and politics, from one's country in terms of patriotism, from militarism, to trust and rely on Yahweh instead, to walk to him along the path that he has provided. The doorway to that path is Pesach, Passover, which is what we're going to be celebrating shortly. And then to, as he says, the condition of the covenant is to observe, to closely examine and carefully consider the very terms and conditions of this covenant. And then, as parents, we're asked to circumcise our sons on the eighth day so that we and they remember and are prepared to exercise good judgment regarding their participation in the covenant, and that we teach them about who Yahweh is and the covenant invitations that he is offering. And then if you go to the third statement that Yah etched in stone, what you find is that there is now a provision for those who are overtly misleading, who lead people astray, who promote the religious and political and patriotic and militaristic lies. And they will spend their eternity separated from God. So there are, in Yahweh's presentation of the afterlife, three destinations. Those that observe the terms and conditions of the covenant and embrace them, accept them, will spend their eternity camping out with Yahweh in his universe, inheriting all that he has to give, adopted as his children, enriched and empowered by him. That's the best of the options. But there's only one of him. His name is Yahweh. You've got to come to know who he is. You need to come to decide whether you like him or not. And then you need to know and understand what he is offering through the covenant and how that relates to these invitations to meet with him, the first doorway of those being Pesach, and whether or not you wish to engage and act upon them to benefit from that, the best of the options. And you have been warned that if you are political, if you are religious, overtly so, and you mislead others in that way, that you will be deemed unforgivable, you will be deemed in association with those who mislead and rob others of their opportunity for life, creating blinders for so many so that they're blinded to the truth, and that you provided false hope, which is the worst of all things, to people, that there has to be a consequence for that, and the consequence is the singularity. as Roy speaks of it. A lightless place where there is no movement, there is no escape, there is no light, but there is eternal consciousness and eternal darkness. And we don't know what percentage of humankind are destined for that fate, but my guess is that it's less than 1%, because the vast preponderance of people just go along. They're victims of religion. They're victims of political and patriotic lies and of military deceptions. They're victims of these things. Now, they're not hopeless victims. They all had a chance. They could have gone against the flow. They could have stood up. They could have walked in a different direction. They could have taken Yahweh's advice and walked away from these things and to walk to Him. But the vast preponderance of people will simply have squandered the life that they were given. And upon their demise, their souls will cease to exist. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. They had their life. They were given the opportunity. They were given the roadmap. It was there just as it was with Mickey and Minnie, as Walt provided the means to live beyond Flatland. We were all given directions as to how to live beyond our three-dimensional construct. Same set of guidance to all humanity. We can ignore it. We can reject it. We can accept it. Those are our options. Or if you are like Paul, you can go to war against it and corrupt it and change it and besmirch it. And so, for those who elect just to go along with the flow, who either because they have become religious and they're, and that evidence and reason, when it comes from God Himself, that God's own testimony does not resonate with them, when they're actually antagonistic, as so many Christians are, to God's own testimony, that if they're in that realm, then at the end of their life, their souls will simply cease to exist. Now, well, John says, well, that's not good. Well, yeah, that's true, it's not good. But it's not bad either. It's just nothingness. You know, if God were as Christians purport, as Muslims purport, saving some and Himself assuring that those who did not do whatever it was that He said were tortured forever in hell, then said God of Christianity and said God of Islam would be sadistic. You know, love me or I'm going to see to you're tortured forever. Obey me or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever. That kind of a God is disgusting. But that's the God of Christianity. It's either heaven or hell in Christianity. And a God that would say, you know, if you don't accept what I've offered for heaven, then I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever in hell. That kind of a God is revolting. Sadistic. Atheists know it. Agnostics know it. It's one of the great roadblocks. Christianity has created one of the great roadblocks to thinking people coming to know who God is. But you see, the real God didn't say any of that. It's not heaven or hell. The vast preponderance of souls simply cease to exist. There must be over 1,000 references between Yahweh and Yahusha to the fate of souls. And almost all of them speak about the annihilation of a soul, the fact that it is destroyed, that it ceases to exist. It's not a punishment, no pain. There's nothing bad associated with that. Well, that's squandering of the opportunity for good. It isn't eternal torment. And so it resolves the single biggest issue that that atheists and agnostics have. Roy came into the covenant as an atheist turned agnostic. My good friend Yoel, who has been the person who has made all of these books and programs available through his programming skills, transitioned from atheist to agnostic to a member of the covenant family. It is so much easier for individuals who are not religious once they know that the actual creator God of the universe is truthful and trustworthy, and that all of the stupidity that is ascribed to him through religion is inconsistent with what he has to say. And that once myths like you either agree with God or he will see to it that you're tortured forever are repudiated, then it becomes possible for thinking individuals like Roy, like Yoel, like James, who is essential to the forum for this program, to come to know Yahweh, cast aside the disparaging view of him that is created in religion, and now use evidence and reason to come to know the Creator and become part of his family. Once again, John and I were talking during the break, and it is truly amazing how logical, rational, appropriate Yahweh's plan is, how thought-provoking, really, his plan is, where everybody gets what's appropriate. And that the realization that God isn't a jerk. He doesn't say, acquiesce to what I have said, or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever. He doesn't involve himself in the torture business. And the vast preponderance of souls simply cease to exist. But it also, in this way, eliminates the concepts of bodily resurrection and which is held by Christianity, and of reincarnation that is held by Eastern religions. Bodily resurrection is going the wrong direction. Yahweh never speaks of bodily resurrection as being anything but a symbol for what's actually important, which is for us to transition from being material and matter to being energy-based. That's the whole concept that Roy presented. You want to get from flatland to the three-dimensional realm of Walt. You want to get from our three-dimensional construct, stuck in time as we are, with all the limitations of the physical, where there's this enormous universe out there, and we can't even travel any further than our own orbiting moon, much less to the next planet, much less to the next galaxy, much less to galaxies that are billions of light years away. Being a physical, material entity, we are not only trapped in a devolving construct where we actually become worse as we age, and that when we die, we deteriorate, and our carcass, rotting carcass, becomes part of the cycle of life for new grasses that are then grazed upon by the grazing animals, eaten by the carnivores, and it goes on and on. That you don't want to be stuck in flatland, which is what bodily resurrection would be all about, and it's physically impossible, scientifically impossible, and undesirable. You want to be elevated out of flatland. And that's why there's this spiritual transformation. That's why Bokodom speaks of a spiritual reunification of the spirit of Yahweh and Yosha's soul, not of a bodily resurrection. That's why we're told that no one recognized him, because he was an entirely different entity, as we will be when we transition out of flatland. And so all of this is designed to help us actually understand who God is and what he's offering. And to get there, we have to have the right perspective. We've got to cast aside all of the religious myth, walk away from it, disassociate ourselves with it, so that we're open to the truth. We're open to viewing the manual that Yahweh has provided for us to transition our physical, material world, stuck in time in this three-dimensional construct, and be elevated into the power and enlightenment and the freedom of seven dimensions and the roadmap to freedom, to this transition, this journey of a lifetime, is the Torah. And the covenant is the centerpiece of the Torah, where it explains what are the terms and conditions of participating in Yahweh's family. And the Moed Mikre, these invitations to meet with God, of which the first is Passover, Pesach, the doorway to eternal life, are integrated into those terms and conditions. When he says, walk to me and become perfect, you're perfected on matzah, which is part of Passover. And for those who would say, you know, boy, it's not good that souls would just be annihilated, ceasing to exist upon their mortal demise. Can you imagine if God just said, you know, every soul gets to spend eternity in heaven, regardless of what lies or deceptions they promoted, regardless of how heinous their behavior might have been, no matter how dim-witted they may be, no matter how lethargic they may be in terms of caring about being observant and of coming to know the truth. Can you imagine spending eternity with people who are not interested in learning? And what are you going to do in eternity? To make eternity fun, we have to be out exploring the universe with its creator. We have to constantly be learning and growing, or eternity would be hellish, dull, and repetitive. It's all about exploration. You don't want to be there with somebody who is not interested in learning, who doesn't find that fun. You don't want to be there if eternity was filled with the same kind of nincompoops we have on this earth. You want to be there with an abominator? Do you want to be there with an imam who is selling spiritualized trinkets when accused of doing so, falsely accused of a woman of burning the Quran and promoting a religion that then burns her alive? Do you think that would be fun in eternity? God has to have a filter for determining who should be there.